Hello, Uganda. Good evening and welcome to this edition of The Hot Seat on 933 KFM. I welcome your listeners across this beautiful land, the Pearl of Africa. My name is Patrick Kamara. Tonight, we talk about energy because we are observing the 2019 Energy Week. Let me make a break of ground here. Uganda is richly endowed with a variety of renewable energy resources, which include plentiful wood and non-woody biomass, solar, wind, geothermal, and hydrological resources. Presently, with the exception of biomass, only a meager fraction of the country's renewable energy potential is exploited. It is estimated that other renewable sources of energy, excluding large hydropower, contributes less than 2% of Uganda's total energy consumption. So we'll be talking about efficient utilization of energy and alternative modern forms of clean energy. Let me introduce my guest this evening. I have Rachel Nalule, who's a program officer for renewable energy at Environmental Alert. Welcome to the show, Rachel.
Thank you, and good evening, our listeners.
I have Mr. John Tumuhimbise, who's the assistant commissioner at the Ministry of Energy and Mineral Development in charge of renewable energy. Welcome to the show, John.
Thank you. Good evening, listeners.
And we have the country director, WWF Uganda, Mr. David Dooley. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me here. Good evening, viewers.
Let me begin with you, David. You know, I just want to make things very simple. When we talk about efficient utilization of energy and alternative modern forms of clean energy, do we have efficient utilization of energy? Do we really have alternative forms of clean energy to talk about for the majority of the Ugandan population?
Thank you, Patrick. Good evening again, listeners. When we talk about efficient and modern energy utilization, we are really driving into the future and seeing how we can move from where we are now to that level of having that efficient and modern energy that would be really, you know, cutting across border and being used by majority of the citizens that currently don't have them, and be able to conserve our nature and environment, and having the right technology, the right policies to disseminate this information down there, and having the right capacity and institutions to make sure that this efficient and modern renewable energy is available for everyone. So we have a bright future here because, one, we have the policy and institutional framework that really promotes that. We need action. What we are lacking is action and enforcement and an adoption of these renewable energy technologies. And the efficiency is more about how you utilize it, the security. And then the technology that would come with the production of that energy, it must be efficient in terms of reduction of waste and improving on better energy content of the products that we would use to generate energy.
But David, you know for sure that over 90% of the Ugandan people tonight, for those who are going to have dinner, that dinner will have been prepared either using charcoal or wood. And that's not sustainable.
Absolutely. It's not sustainable, but we cannot run away from biomass energy as a main source of energy production for cooking in our country. Reasons being, we still have other forms of energy which are really expensive. For example, nobody uses electricity generated from hydropower for cooking. We need a mix of energy. We need the gas, the petroleum liquefied gas as a mix. We need briquettes that is going to efficient and modern technology that instead of using charcoal and using firewood, you actually produce briquettes from agricultural waste. So you will be diversifying the extent to which you can harness energy for usage. And I think we already have, as a country, a number of grounds laid for this. There are companies, private companies, and civil society organizations that are already engaged in adopting this technology and producing them at scale. The problem we have is that the education and awareness on the usage of this is still very low. And that's why the Energy Week really comes out very handy in providing that information, exhibiting those technologies. But we are not really, you know, we do it in Kampala, we have the whole country that should be covered. So we need to extend our arms and influence to cover the districts. If we're in the Energy Week like this, we should have districts also doing that similar thing. And I think this goes along in looking at the institutions, decentralizing energy. We are already doing this, for example, in Kasese, where we have the district energy strategy, that emphasizing that. And that district energy strategy has been actually now extended to cover three more districts. Actually, this week, in as part of the celebration of the Energy Week, Masindi has launched theirs. They have completed, and the district council launched it last week. So these are the kind of things that we can actually do to cover the whole country and really avert this trend. The point is that we really need to change the tide. Okay. We need to change the curve. We cannot continue like this.
Commissioner Tumuhimbise, you know, almost 100 years ago, British Prime Minister, when he set foot in Uganda and was dazzled by the beauty of our country, he called it the Pearl of Africa. If things were to happen and that man would come again, would he still call us the Pearl of Africa? With the way how we have destroyed the environment, I've been to areas of Ngoma and Nakaseke. You know, the forest there and the trees have been decimated almost at an industrial scale. Why?
Thank you very much, Patrick. To a large extent, Churchill would not refer to Uganda as the power of Africa because, I mean, we have done a lot of destruction, and part of the problem is that we have extracted energy beyond a sustainable yield, and we are continuously eating into the stock. So you are right to say that we have done a lot of
damage
and evil, and it's high time we came up with interventions to address the situation. And to this end, the Minister of Energy and Mineral Development is promoting a number of policies geared towards moving away from wood biomass to non-wood forms of biomass and other substitutes that can substitute wood biomass as a source of energy.
You know, Rachel Naruli, I know the civil society has made the right noise, and sometimes you meet and make a lot of sense. But are you not even make a lot of sense to yourselves, not the people who matter in the villages and everywhere else, those who are in the habit of destroying the environment? Are you making sense to them as well?
Well, thank you, Patrick. I would start with the fact that change really starts with us. And when you look at civil society, basically, like you're calling it making noise, but I think it is the right noise that we always make. And in this case, I'm talking of the evidence-based or fact-based noise. If you look at the statistics, of course, that is research that is being done. And
Rachel, I'm not refuting that you are making the right noise. I'm not refuting that you don't have the evidence. What I'm questioning whether you're not making that noise and making sense only to yourselves in a room and the people who are in the habit of destroying the environment, just like the other day, Kasiria Gwanga had to do something drastic that perhaps he shouldn't have done, but because people have not been reached to understand.
Yeah, I would really agree with you. But you see, when you make the noise, this time I'm calling it awareness, through awareness, yes, we are making sense, but probably the most important issue here is the action that we need. Well, you agree with me that you can do your awareness on, for example, the technologies down there, and like the district strategies, if they are not in place as well, if you don't continue advocating for these strategies, then you will not be making sense. And when you do that, I think it really needs to be followed up by implementation and really to have action being taken in that case.
I know Commissioner Tumuhimbise said to your end, there's something you are doing. Let me ask this again. What has the government of Uganda, through your ministry, done to address the key issues in the renewable energy sector to advance sustainable use and access of renewable energy resources?
Thank you, Patrick. Well, government realizes that there are quite a number of issues and barriers regarding the adoption of renewable energy technologies. And these range from lack of awareness, as my colleague has put it, high prices for some of these technologies, which are not easily affordable to the majority of the people, substandard products on the market, which distort the market and create a negative publicity effect, issues of financing, all these are barriers. And the government of Uganda, through the Ministry of Energy and Mineral Development, has come up with a number of strategies to address these barriers. One, we are engaged in demonstration of these technologies to really show that these technologies can work. They are efficacious, they can work, so that our people, our households, institutions, industries, and all users can adopt them. Then government also created Uganda Energy Credit Capitalization Company to address issues of financing. The Credit Capitalization Company provides concessionary loans to developers who are interested in developing renewables, but also they finance the acquisition of renewable energy technologies like solar systems, like biogas, and so forth. Then we also work with the National Bureau of Standards, the Standards Board, to address the issue of counterfeits and substandard products on the market, so that the consumers can get value for their money. So in addition, of course, government creates an enabling environment by way of formulating policies. We have the energy policy, the renewable energy policy. All these create an enabling environment through which the renewable energy subsector can thrive and grow.
Okay, gentlemen and lady, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, I'll be asking my guest, what will it take for us to move at a much better speed? Do we need some kind of a shock therapy when the environment fights back? We'll be right back. Welcome back to 933 KFM, and this is The Hot Seat. My name is Patrick Kamara. My guests tonight are Rachel Nalule, Program Officer for Renewable Energy at Environmental Art, Mr. David Dooley, Country Director, WWF Uganda, and we have Mr. John Tumuhimbise, who is the Assistant Commissioner for Renewable Energy at the Ministry of Energy and Mineral Development, and we're talking about efficient utilization of energy and alternative modern forms of clean energy. And before I went to break, I was thinking, what is it going to happen? What will happen so that we can develop some norms and culture that respects, you know, our environment, but also understand that we need to use alternative renewable source of energy for us to move ahead as a human race or as Ugandans. Because if you go to areas like we have had, like, for example, the forest of Dzoka, people have made a lot of noise about it. You know, depleted, Mavira, depleted, you know, Bugoma, depleted, Kagora, depleted, and many other forests. And you wonder, Mr. John, you say, how far has your gospel gone in trying to sensitize Ugandans that, look, this is what we need to do, otherwise we're cooked?
Yeah, thank you very much, Patrick. All along, the ministry has been carrying out awareness to change mindsets and culture of the people. But we have also promoted a number of technologies, more efficient technologies like stoves, like biogas, like...
You're talking about biogas that requires somebody to have a cow, and you actually know a cow in Africa or in Uganda is a source of wealth, and so you're talking about the rich.
Patrick, almost every person owns a cow.
Oh, Mr. Temehembise.
Yes.
You are not in touch with reality.
Okay, the point I was trying to make was that we are promoting these substitutes, but also at the same time trying to change the mindset and culture of the people to shift to other sources of energy and utilize substitutes like briquettes, substitutes like biogas, and we have tried to come up with an incentive system that are intended to move people away from wood biomass, which is already stressed and under pressure,
okay,
to other sources that are not.
Mr. Dooley, I saw a gentleman making briquettes around Bujuko on Mitiana Road there at a factory level, and I was wondering, and many other people, and I was wondering the kind of energy they are using to produce energy, if they are not even using a lot of energy. You know what I mean? Because I see as if he was putting so much to produce so little. And no wonder it appears the business is wobbly. People in the briquette business, apart from a gentleman I saw in Buyogere, he was a friend of mine making briquettes, but majority of them seem to be putting so much energy to produce so little energy.
Yes, Patrick, I have not seen this factory you're talking about, but really what we should be looking at is technologies that are appropriate, cost-effective, and then can produce also high-value products. That is high calorific value of the bricks that you're talking, briquettes you're talking about. So you could be talking about somebody struggling and is using the wrong technology. That is probably not giving him enough carbonization of the agricultural waste that he's aiming to get the briquettes out of. On another note, there are companies that are really benefiting and they are growing bigger and bigger. There's one called Josie that I know, because I'm a client of that company, and I buy and use briquettes from there. They are producing briquettes in a place not very far away from the center of town, and they have outlets in many parts of the country of Kampala. And the briquettes are basically very cheap, and I don't think they would be in business if they are not making profits. Briquettes of 1,000 shillings that you can put on the ordinary charcoal stove and be able to use it to cook food for more than 8 people, and it'll last a long all day. And the briquettes of 1,500 that can be used on a bigger sigiri or a bigger stove and can cook for more than 10 people in a family. So these guys should be using the right technology, the right ingredients, and getting the right calorific value for their briquettes that they're selling. So this is what we are really driving at. We need to have standard cutting across that can be adopted and used by companies. You cannot compare charcoal making that is done on earth kilns to charcoal making that is done on proper modern kilns and in terms of the outcome and the recovery that you get from there. You waste a lot by doing on earth kilns. You first of all kill the soil. That's what we are talking about environment. And then secondly, you're getting very little out of it. And sometimes you get nothing at all.
Okay.
And that's efficiency we are talking about. Those are the modern technologies that we are talking about that should be promoted. And then get rid of the old systems that has been in place.
So, Rachel, in this sector where you also operate in the energy, one would want to know what are the challenges and issues emerging that you see?
Thank you, Patrick. The energy sector really has challenges. I would agree with you that we are looking at the technologies, like my colleagues have mentioned. There are different technologies, but also looking at the income level or affordability of the different technologies. I may afford it myself, but looking at the status of other people, for example, like the hard-to-reach communities, you see, the clean cook stove that we are promoting here may be really expensive for them, for these technologies. Then the other challenge I see in the sector, like we are mentioning, this is the Energy Week, but it is in Kampala. And it is a week where we have, like, where we want to create awareness on the different technologies and maybe other things in the sector. But the other districts or other places in the country, they are not aware. So we see also that awareness is not reaching elsewhere where it could be like promoting the adaptation of the different technologies.
I have seen civil society organizations, I don't remember which exactly, teaching people to make, you know, energy saving cook stoves, you know, in their kitchen. And really, and it helps because they're taking little few firewood, but also, you know, you avoid respiratory problems. Why can't that be done at a massive scale?
That is a good note to note that actually under this project that we are implementing, we have a hub. We are also doing it at the hub level, and these partners are really doing the same. They are training people. Communities, the youth, the women groups in constructing these installation, but also repair and maintenance. But you see, the like civil society, we depend like so much of the funding from partners. So you may find that much as this can be done, but somehow it has a limitation. So that's why we are saying that we should work together with other development partners and also the ministry to upscale some of these technologies and then the trainings down to the other grassroots levels.
Some of these technologies, Mr. Tumihimbisi, are so simple, especially the energy-saving cook stoves.
Yes.
So if you, as a ministry, you could put up a policy, because we are good at making policies, Uganda, you know, make a policy and say every home we must have an energy-saving cook stove. In that way, you are saving on the environment, but also you're protecting people's lives in form of avoiding respiratory infections. That can be, you know, enforced into the law or something like that.
Thank you, Patrick. I think you are very right. You are spot on. And government has been partnering with several civil society organizations and several grassroots organizations to disseminate those simple stoves that rely on local materials. And as I talk now, starting from a very low base, our adoption has been going up. And the target is actually to have universal access of those stoves by 2030. So we are working very hard around the clock to make sure that universal access of clean cooking solutions
really moving towards your target?
Yes, it is moving towards our target. Because, I mean, these are relatively new technologies from zero. We attained 5, 10. Now we are somewhere around 25.
David, as a human race, are we moving forward or somehow stagnating or going back? Because when we were young, we would go into collecting firewood, as you have heard, firewood, dead wood that is, you know, that is dry, and then we bring it home. But now if you go in most villages in Uganda, there's no more collection of firewood. People go and cut real trees. And even whether it is a mango tree or a jackfruit, it will be cut down and then to create some firewood. We have lost it as a people, haven't we?
Yeah, I think we have not lost entirely everything.
But when you go for a mango tree, go for a jackfruit tree, and you cut it so that you can eat.
Let me come on that. Mm-hmm. I think the fundamental and root cause of this is because of our agricultural systems. We have adopted agricultural systems that we practice that relies on having extensive expanse of land, planting a monoculture like beans or maize, and getting very little from it. And then when the land gets exhausted, you move to another land, another area, fresh area where there's forest, cut it down, burn it, and then charcoal burning will follow that, and then put the crops, and then it becomes exhausted, you move to another one. That is the old primitive shifting cultivation method that is now manifesting itself in our country where we have a bigger population and we don't have that area. So unless we start talking to agriculture, and that's the challenge, one of the challenges that we have, the coordination between the Ministry of Energy and Mineral Development, Ministry of Education, Agriculture, health.
Agriculture, which employs more than 70% of the biggest part of our population, but contributes so little to the GDP.
Absolutely.
Does it make sense?
And that's the irony.
Okay.
So
okay.
We need to transform these agricultural systems into a more productive one, smaller piece of land, and leave the rest of the land to even just naturally regenerate with forests. This is something that is achievable.
Gentlemen and lady, we're going to take a break. Welcome back to 933 KFM, and this is the Hot Seat. My name is Patrick Amar. My guests tonight are Rachel Narule, Mr. David Dooley, and John Tumhembise. And we're talking about energy because we are observing Energy Week. You know, sometimes I get intrigued. I haven't been to the homes of the rich and famous and powerful, but I can imagine, John, that perhaps even the rich, famous and powerful are also using charcoal. And if that is the case, then it is embarrassing, for lack of a better word.
Patrick, you are very right.
I am?
Yeah, indeed, our people have not moved away from traditional sources of energy to modern sources of energy, even when they have the means and income to switch to better fuels. And I think, again, that is to do with our culture, our cooking habits, and so forth and so on. An example is if one is going to prepare kalo or steam matoke for an hour, which other source is better than charcoal or firewood? Certainly he would not use gas, or he would not use electricity. So I think we need to change our culture.
And talking about matoke, in this part of the world, matoke, yes, is the food, the rest is something else.
Yes.
So in other words, you always have to use charcoal or wood.
Yeah, so we have to look at some of those factors. Yeah.
Sure. And those who say actually there are some foods, maybe if you want maybe to roast maize or maybe your meat, that the best way and the aroma will only come when you have used wood. But is maybe the discovery of oil in the Alberton Graben and gas likely to help us, David? And if we use it well, can we reach a level where we find it is affordable and the culture changes and maybe people go to gas? It may not be the best alternative, but maybe it can help on the environment, can't it?
Yeah, Patrick, there's a study that we did at WWF with other institutions, and we were looking at the development path of energy that can take Uganda to 100% renewable energy by 2050. And that study recommends that this is possible, this is a possibility, but also observes that some of the energy sources that we use, like charcoal and firewood that we mentioned now, are not going to be wiped out within a short time. We'll definitely use them up to about 2030, but on a reducing scale. And what we mean by reducing scale is that the liquefied petroleum gas would come in as a mix, and therefore oil and gas exploration that is happening now, going to development phase, if it could, you know, open a good window for usage of gas, LPGs, and making it affordable to the lowest level, make it cost effective, so that we start coming out with an energy mix where in a family of a rich person that you're talking about, he has gas, he has briquettes, and he can also use electricity. That also means the hydropower electricity that is coming from the main grid should also be affordable. The current rate, the tariff that we have, is just impossible. You can't even use it for boiling water for tea. So basically, this study, you know, predicts that the scenario that we could have is to have an energy mix that should take us, but increasingly going to a more environmentally friendly one, which is the renewable one, and then moving away from those ones which are really difficult or giving a lot of harm to the environment.
Mr. Tumihimbise, I understand this country is so endowed that we have a lot of potential for geothermal. And I'm wondering whether the ministry or the government of Uganda is in preparation to harness that so that maybe geothermal can be the solution. Or I'm told Tanzania discovered a lot of that energy. Whether there's a preparation at an East African level so that we can use the natural resources that Tanzania can offer, or even our own.
Yeah, it is very true that we are very endowed with geothermal resources, and these resources occur in the Western Rift Valley. And the capacity, the potential is around 450 megawatts, and government policy is to develop all renewable energy potential in the country, including geothermal resources. And as I speak now, there are feasibility studies to establish the characteristics of the resource so that that can guide further investment and production of energy from geothermal resources in the country.
Rachel, because people have cut so much forest around the areas of Greater Ankole in Bushenyi and Bunyaruguru areas, and which is now called Rubirizi, because for their energy needs. Now River Wizi, which supports the city of Mbarara now, has become a trickle. And that city, which is growing at a supersonic speed, is going to find itself in a really dangerous situation where they'll have to look for water. As an environmental art, I wonder what propositions you are making for the people of that area. Because I know they suggested they can get water from River Kagera. River Kagera is on the border with Tanzania. You'll need some kind of transnational border agreement for you to be able to get that water. The case of Mbarara, what do you make of it?
You're absolutely right. When you look at the place, it's really getting depleted and degraded. But as a civil society or as environmental art in this case now, we have to advocate for restoration of the area. And like my colleague was talking about, you see these sectors are also linked. So you can't talk of Minister of Energy and you leave out Minister of Water and Environment. Because now when we work through NFA, in this case, Minister of Water and Environment, we can do the restoration of maybe like planting trees around and having that restored. But all that takes action.
What I know where I come from, which is Toro, the king there, King Oyo, is super focused on saving River Mpanga and has tried to marshal support from the far and wide so that the river can be saved, because they have realized that without it, they can find themselves in big trouble. So they have created a buffer and told people, you must be some meters away, so do not have to plant up to the river. And it looks like slowly people are beginning to realize. But gentlemen and lady, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to have comments and questions coming in from those who have been listening to us tonight. Welcome back to 933 KFM, and this is The Hot Seat. My name is Patrick Kamara. My guests tonight are Rachel Naludi, Mr. David Dooley, and John Tumuhimbise, and we were talking about renewable energy. You know, just this week, I think, yesterday, there was a big climate summit in New York. And this is where the young Swedish girl, the teenager, called it Guten Trubag, you know, made an appeal to the rest of the world and the elder people that they should do more. They need to do more. We have seen a lot of havoc. In Brazil, the Amazon have been burning. They call them the lungs of the world. But even ourselves here, we have lost so much. And somebody is sending a message in here, who is my OB from St. Leo's College. He says, thank you to you all. Those officials cannot do much to fight against environmental destruction. Reason being, it's done by the rich and the government officials themselves. Corruption is high in all. He says in all. But moving forward, And in this energy week, David, what should we really be super focused on so that at least we can create some change?
Yes, I think we really need to accelerate efforts that we have done over time, for which we have some good experience and exposure on how we have done those things. We've talked about adoption of renewable energy being on the rise. We have talked about the prices of renewable energy also coming down. It's now becoming more affordable, but still very high. We talked about the tariff for electricity, which is basically still very high. So we really need to tackle on those issues, those really critical barriers that are making it hard for adoption of renewable energy. But I think also beyond that, we need to look at the environment at large. Because energy, you know, it takes three facets. The security of the energy, that is reliability and continuity of it. There is equity, that's making sure that everybody receives a fair amount of energy. And then there's also the issue of, you know, sustaining and maintaining the environment from which that energy is derived. So putting all this triangulation of all these critical issues should be really key for us as a nation, if we are going to move forward on this.
You know, Rachel, for me, growing up in the area of Toroi, from the Chenjojo, we would see the mountain ranges of the Rwenzori. And it would always be fascinate my late father to stand in his courtyard and then he sees, the snow-capped mountains of the Rwenzori. And he'd always call us and gather, say, hey, come and see the snow. And sometimes I would never understand until recently, when I realized, look, wait a minute. So we used to have snow right on the equator and you are maybe even 100 kilometers away and you're able to see it. All that is gone. We have lost so much that we may not know. And some of them is because of how we have decided to harness energy. And one of them is harness the environment for our cooking needs and other needs. So from your point of view, what can we do as a people?
Thank you, Patrick. I think that loss is all about the loss of the degradation of the forest resource. Because, you know, when you look at the hydrological cycle, it is the forest that really play much. And here we are talking about the trees that are being cut down for charcoal and the unsustainable use of the resource. So in that case, that's why I was like, we need to work together with the different ministries, the Ministry of Energy working together with the Ministry of Water and Environment. We harness or advance biomass production through tree planting. That one, we have to continue
okay.
doing that.
Let me bring in here some of the views and comments coming in. Leon Samuel, you say government has to do its work. Conrad, you say let the government of Uganda reduce power tariffs, then make subscription for remember free of any charge, then pressure on forests will reduce. Conrad, those are your views. Martin Opio, you say, in this country, only the poor citizens are being punished and why the ministry is focusing on other people. Michael Ekode, you say, I used to blame a lot the civilians that they have destroyed the environment, but it's the opposite. The government officials are the pioneers who have engineered the destruction of environment in the name of offering wetlands to the investors, and even some ministers own these wetlands. There will be no effective law if within the government there are mafias and victims of the environment destruction. Finally, my question goes to John. There are authorities like NFA, NEMA, and many more. Why have they failed to implement the laws gazetted within their offices to stop environmental destruction? Why would they still be depending on taxpayers' money if their works are not yielding anything to protect the environment? Can they resign for God and my country? Michael Kode from Tororo. Could you answer that quickly, John?
Patrick, of course, I'm here representing Ministry of Energy and Mineral Development.
Yes.
And not NFA and NEMA.
Okay. So you wouldn't want to get into that?
No.
Noah Bagash, you say the government should provide an affordable, available, and accessible alternative to charcoal and firewood. there won't be an effective implementation of any environmental laws, as even those implementers use charcoal and firewood in their homes. And then on wetlands, government needs to check itself too, because many wetlands have been given out to investors in the name of economic growth, but without analyzing the cost benefit of this. In general, it's the government's duty to put itself in order. If it means sensitizing the public, let government come with better outlined policies and alternatives that will give Ugandans hope and free will to cease environmental degradation. But we don't lack policies, do we? Anyway, our time is out, so let me ask you, gentlemen and lady, to make your concluding remarks. I'm beginning with you, Rachel, your parting shot.
Thank you, Patrick, and thank you to our dear listeners for tuning in. My last word, I encourage everyone to take part in this, in the promotion of the utilization of sustainable, clean, and modern energy sources. And right now, what is going on, we have the Energy Week, yes, as people in the city, apart from those in the villages where it is not there, but I encourage everyone to go and participate, to go and be part of the Energy Week. There are technologies there. There is a lot of information. There are things for us to learn.
So where and
to, it is in Lugogo, KC grounds,
okay.
And it is running. Actually, today was the launch. So it is running from today until Sunday, which will be the climax.
All right. John, your concluding remark.
Patrick, I would also like to appeal to members of the general public to take part in our exhibitions, get themselves those efficient technologies. We have stoves, we have solar-based technologies, irrigation pumps, stoves for households, for institutions and all that at bargain prices. So let them not miss out on these technologies. But also, we have a biomass energy dialogue, we have a fuel efficiency forum, so they can also come and participate in
all
this
right.
event.
David, your concluding remark, very briefly, sir.
Thank you. I just want to appeal to the public that energy is a lifeline for development. There is no nation that can develop without harnessing its potential for energy. So as a nation, I think we should look at energy the way we look at water, the way we look at other facets of economic development. This is going to be the way, a breakthrough for us for sustainable and middle class to evolve. I also want to encourage this very interesting observation that has come from the listeners, that, you know, there's a process to update the policies and revise the policy, the renewable energy policy and the energy policy. Please bring up your ideas. For us as civil society, we'll reach you out to get those ideas and have them really translated into policy issues that can be
thank
taken
you
by government.
Very much. David, John and Rachel, thank you very much. We appreciate your insights on the matter. Good night and God bless Uganda.